Thought for today. I share unconditional love. Thought for today. I can share unconditional love as I am it. I can share unconditional love as I am it. I can share unconditional love as I am it. I think that the phrase unconditional love is the toughest phrase that we could ever utter. Because unconditional love, while it is the ultimate of love, while it is the ultimate of being a master, while it is nothing to do with your divine self, but it's the ultimate of being a human. However, if you're going to be a human, people won't like you if you're unconditionally loving. Humans like conditional love. Humans equate their entire life on conditional love. And if you are unconditional loving, see, I can share unconditional love as I am it. And I am it. And you are it too, but you don't want to be just yet. Because when you're unconditional love, let's start with one point, you have no friends. A friend is someone special to you, better than anybody else, that you enjoy their company more than anybody else. You find that a friend is someone who understands you. We were talking about being a parent and being a friend. And this woman said to me that she is a parent, but she's also a friend. And she wants to be a friend to her children. And I said, you are one of the biggest cheats in the world. What? You're one of the biggest cheats in the world. You cannot be a friend to your children. A friend is someone who ignores your problems. A friend is someone who ignores your inadequacies. A friend is someone who doesn't encourage you to be better, just accepts you just the way you are. And this is what the song's about Jesus. Jesus loves the little children just the way they are. Little rattlesnakes and all, you know, loving angels and all. Well, that's not true. You see, Jesus has not the capacity to love anything conditionally. He loves you unconditionally, and he does not see any of your faults or failures. He doesn't see any of your growing experiences. He doesn't see any of your inadequacies or lack of any kind. He just sees you. He sees right through you, in fact, to your divinity. He sees right through you to your magnificence. He sees right through you to the master that you are. Now, would you like him to see your problems? So many times we hear the saying, now don't do anything that you shouldn't. Remember, Jesus is always looking over your shoulder. My God, poor Jesus. If he were looking over my shoulder, what would he see me doing? Everything good. Because that's his nature. He couldn't see anything that I'm having a problem with. If he sees me stumbling along, he says, oh, you're enjoying stumbling along. You know, because that's okay. Everything is okay. He doesn't judge. He doesn't make any of those statements. We, if we want to be unconditionally loving like the Master, we have to make no judgments. We don't look at anyone fat, thin, tall, short. We might say, well, those are just objective appearances that we are observing. All right. This is not a request. This is just an example or a symbol. All of you stand up and you see, not stay down. I said this is an example. All of you stand up. Now you're standing before me and I'm looking at you. Now, if I see one of you nicer than the other, I'm judging. If I see one of you taller or shorter than the other, I'm judging. Because I see your archetypal self. Wouldn't you like to see that? I see practice on others. I see your archetypal self, and you are radiant and glorious and fabulous. I see your archetypal self, even though you might have a crippled outside body. Your archetypal self behind that is absolutely magnificent beyond anything you could ever conceive. You cannot really conceive it, but it's kind of fun to try. But your archetypal body is so magnificent, is so All right, now let's not make this into something that is beyond imagination. This doesn't count. They have painted pictures of Jesus as he was ascended and as he came back, you know, transfigured. But nobody who ever saw him painted the picture unless they saw him in their mind, which is okay too. But how do people paint the transcended Jesus? How do they paint the normal Jesus? The normal Jesus, they paint pretty cool too, don't they? As a nice guy, you know. Big hands and carpenter's hands, even though carpenter, but all these other neat things about him. But they paint him in that way. And then when he has ascended, he's come out of the tomb, and he's walking. Where'd he get the clothes from? All of a sudden, he's got a nice robe on again. They took his robe away from him. They threw him in the tomb naked, you know. That's what they always do. But you say, well, they wrapped him in clothing and this and that. No, this was a different situation. He was a criminal. He was a heinous criminal. And heinous criminals are not given anything to cover themselves. The reason they're hung on the cross is to disgrace them. And their naked bodies are supposed to even disgrace them more. But yet a naked body is not a disgraceful thing, as much as men try to make it so. Now, what did Jesus really look like as he was ready for the cross and as he was hung on the cross? What did he look like? Did he look like an ordinary man? Quite so. They had trouble finding him. Judas had to kiss him before the guards could know that it was he. They had no idea. He looked just like everybody else. He's just a normal Jew from the house of David. He's just an ordinary guy. They couldn't tell. And what did he look like after he came out of the tomb? Well, the ladies along the road said he was radiant. He was a radiant man. But I guess there are radiant men in this world too. But they didn't think anything of it. He walked with them and talked with them and chatted just like you and I would chat about the price of beans in Russia, you know. It's simple little things. And then the women went away. And he went before his disciples. He says, "Hi, guys, I'm back." And they said, "You bet your life you're back. Who are you panning yourself off for Jesus? Don't you realize that our hearts are heavy, that he's gone now and he's not with us anymore? Don't you? Well, how can you play such a cruel joke?" And Thomas says, "I don't see any holes." He must have been standing there naked. "You know, I don't see any holes in you." And Jesus said, "Oops. I'll go back to the drawing board." He went back to the drawing board and got the holes. And that was the only way they could tell him. But even that, you know, silly. Very silly. What is your transcended body like? What is your archetypal body? What is your pure body like? Your original purity and integrity? What's it like? Well, don't ask me. Don't ask anybody else. You just become a pure vessel yourself, and everything you see will be pure. Now, how do you become a pure vessel? I live in my original purity and integrity. I am transcended. I live in my original purity and integrity. I am happy. I like me. I am God. God I am. Interesting things, huh? Interesting. It's allowed to get you in trouble. It's allowed to get you in trouble because people come up to you and say, "Is that what God looks like, you know? You're God? Man, you know, you don't look like what any kind of God I've ever thought about." It's okay. You don't flaunt this in front of other people. You're building this in your consciousness. This is your private domain. This is your private treasure house. You say it to yourself, even though we'll say it here on the internet too. But you say it to yourself. You believe it. You live it. You make it real for yourself. "I am a success. I am a success. I am a carpenter. I'm a good carpenter. I'm a wonderful carpenter." And you go to carpentry school and you study, you watch how good carpenters that you admire do their work, and you practice it. And at home at night, you take a bunch of nails and a board and you start them. And then you take your hammer and you go whack, holding the end of the hammer, the foot of the hammer, and boing, one slam, and it's all the way through. An 8-penny nail, a 12-penny nail, 16-penny nail. spikes, you know, pow, and your muscles build up so beautifully in your biceps. But your aim, see, it's not the muscle so much. The hammer does the work. The hammer's got the hip. You're not taking your hand and hitting the nail in. You're taking the hammerhead, and you want that hammerhead to have all of its velocity straight down and true it into that nail and drive it right straight through that board. You do that for a week or so, every night, using up quite a few nails. But what a wonderful carpenter you make. You'll be able to do your work pop and pop and pop, instead of using these electric guns and rivets and things like that, that they go in crooked and they don't do it. Did you see how he put up our fence? Half of our fence was fluttering in the breeze, going up to Maxwell's. On every other board, there wasn't a nail at the bottom. The dogs just pushed it through and came walking through the fence, you know, which was great. But, I mean, here we pay this man to be a professional. And he's got brand new boards, brand new nails. He bought on us a brand new stapler. And he had somebody there to help line him up on the other side. And he went, poo, poo, poo. But he missed half of them. Then on the fence going between our place and David's and Art's place, half those are not in. But that's Art doing that, and his son. And they didn't know how to do this professionally. But they got more boards nailed on than the professional did. How interesting. The professional is getting professional pay for this. Art and his son were getting good pay. But the professional was getting professional pay, and his work was inferior to the amateurs, you know? Now, did this professional decide he's going to be a fence builder? And so he started building fences in his own backyard. He built fences here and fences there and fences here and fences there, perfecting his skill in doing it. You see, it's not a matter of going fast. It's a matter of knowing what you're doing so that you can do it with the simplest stroke. One hammerhead will blow the nail right through the entire board, fence board, and the 2x4. Those nails aren't long. They're only about 4 penny nails. And they're just shorties, because the board on the fence is only about a half inch, a little better than a half inch. And then the 2x4, it's supposed to be 2 inches, but it isn't. So you got a little nail that's no more than 2 inches at most, you know. But why? Why did he not do a perfect job? He didn't do a perfect job because he thought nobody would notice and nobody would come back and complain about it. And we didn't. If a man wants to do a slipshod job, our complaint isn't going to make him do a careful job. We would just never hire him again. If a man does a good job, we'll hire him back. If a man does a responsible job, we'll hire him back. I told him to take down all the fence around the property. And I said, then there's a fence up here behind the rock going up the mountain for maybe about 200-300 feet. I said, make sure you get that too. I pointed it out to him. I took him over to it. I showed it to him. He didn't take it out because it was awkward to get it out. Now, you see, that's professionalism. Professionalism is doing what you say you will do. And we paid him to do these things. But I don't think we'd ever invite him back on the property again. He's not a bad man. He's just a normal man. He's not a professional. A professional does everything they do with the greatest of care, the greatest of precision. You know? A professional knows what tools they're working with, and when they close up at the end of the day, they take just the tools they're working with, not my tools. And Heinz kept taking my rule with him and other tools. And then he would ask me, he said, where did these come from? And I said, well, those came down from this year, and these came from up here. And then he says, Herb, where are these things? I'm not working in that field, but I have a photographic mind. And when I look at something, I remember it there. Except I had Anita here. And Anita switched everything around because she was doing the work. And then John was here. And John switched everything around the way a New Zealander would do it. And so everything took a new place, and which was great. I mean, but he should have stayed and told us where everything was. But you see, we have an interesting situation here with this unconditional love. We cannot tell other people to be perfect like we want to be. We cannot tell our professionals to be professional. We can just say to ourselves, I am professional. And if you say to yourself, you are professional, what will you see? Will you see the work of an unprofessional anytime? No. You'll only see the work of a professional. If you look for beauty and goodness at all times, you'll find it. There may be ungoodness and unbeauty there, but you can't see it because it's not in your consciousness. Like that unbeauty and ungoodness. You can't see it because it's not in your consciousness. But you see, this is where you are. You're the master. You want to be unconditionally loving. Well, start with yourself. Start with yourself. If you're unconditionally loving, you will think that you're the most wonderful being that's possible to be, because you're starting with yourself. You will think you're the talentedest, the most capable, the most responsible, the most gentle, the most fabulous being that could ever be. That's what you'll think you are. And you'll never kick yourself around the block because you think you're wonderful. And then what will happen to everybody in your world? You look out in your world and everybody will be fabulous. Everybody will be marvelous. Everybody will be supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And you'll be so happy about it because that's the way life is. What are you going to do for yourself in that relationship? Are you going to see yourself first, unconditionally loving? Are you going to love yourself first, unconditional? You say, well, I've got to try it on others. No, you don't. First, you try it on yourself. And if you do that, you're not going to like it. Because it doesn't give you a chance, not one little chance, to say, oh, poor me, it didn't work out. You can't be sorry for yourself. It will not give you one little chance to say, whoops, I made a mistake. You don't say, I made a mistake. You go on and don't make a mistake. Whatever is done, but you don't name it and claim it as something that is imperfect of yourself, because you're incapable of being imperfect. You understand that? You're incapable of being. If you are a person who is unconditionally loving of yourself and everyone else in the world, it's lots of fun. It's lots of fun, but it's a new game. It's a new game. Could I talk about our fence builder with unconditional love? No. No. I could only see him doing a perfect job. Could I talk about our unskilled fence builder doing a perfect job? I already did say he did a much better job than anybody else. Could I talk about anything negative? Could I think rattlesnake and think something bad? Impossible. Unconditional love has no conditions about anything. No conditions of judgment, no conditions of thinking that something is right or wrong, no being touched by anything. But it's wonderful. Now, this is something that's for all of us. It's for all of us to say to ourselves, do I really want to play this game of being a spiritual master? Because if I am a spiritual master, I cannot love my son, my daughter, my mother, my father, my husband, my wife, my aunts and uncles, and whomever. I cannot love any of them. I love all of them equally. But I cannot give my son more attention than I give somebody else. I cannot provide a home for my son or my husband or my wife or my children, whomever they may be. I cannot do that. I see them with a lovely home. I may be in that home too, but I have nothing to do with it. I just see it done. I just see it fulfilled. I don't have to provide anything. I don't have to do anything. I am everything. And when that is the case, you know what happens? You don't give presents to anybody. You don't give gifts to anybody. You don't expect gifts from anybody. You just see yourself surrounded with everything that delights you. Everything. You are not your brother's keeper. You're not your brother's keeper. You're not your brother's keeper. That's a very important thing. If you are your brother's keeper, then you must make sure that your brother has just as much good stuff as you do. You must make sure that his consciousness is just as alert as yours is. Of course, you can do that in your mind, and it does work. But you don't get yourself a new jacket, and then you find that your brother doesn't have a jacket, so you take it off and give it to him. You can't do that. You give your jacket away because you want to give it away, because you want to give it away, not because someone needs it. If anybody is in your world who needs something, and you're giving something to them because they need it, then you're saying, hey, you're beneath my nose, you know, you're under me. You're not as good as I am. I have a jacket, and you don't have a jacket, but I'll give you my jacket. Sure I will, you know, because I'm so superior to you. I have an extra car, and I'll give you a car because I don't really need it, and I'm superior to you. What happens when you do things like that? Whenever you do things like that, you shut off a flow of harmony between you and whomever you give things to. Because the minute you give something to them, I gave a car to my brother. And the first thing he said when I brought it to him, he said, oh, the one tire leaks. Is there a spare? You know, he didn't say, oh, no problem. I got a car. I buy a tire, about four or five of them, whatever it's called for, you know, no problem. And then he said, the windshield wiper didn't work. I mean, why are you telling me these things? What does it mean to me that the windshield wiper doesn't work? It's his car now. And then he didn't get his driver's license because things didn't work out for it. And he says, Herb, did you want to take the car back? I said, Ray, I gave you that car. You do anything you want with it. Smash it up, drive it, enjoy it. Sell it, anything you want. It's your car. I'm not an Indian giver, as the phrase goes. I'm not someone who gives and wants to take it back. No way. I mean, that's yours. I gave that. But you see, the tendency is there to say, well, that's really your car. I have no use for it. You gave it to me to use. Now I can't drive, you know. But quite likely he'll get his license back. But he rather likes having the neighbors take him for a ride and having the bus drop right at his front door and pick himself and David up as they go to the hospital or wherever they go. And no responsibility. Then on the way back, they bring him right straight back there, and it costs him 50 cents for each ride in the bus, wherever they want to go. You know, that's not bad. And then if he wanted it, he could have it for free. But he said he didn't want it to be that cheap, you know. But everything is his. Everything is his. He doesn't need anything. He has everything. And she's like May. Kip died, her husband, and he always took care of her. Now she's going into a nursing home where she'll have 24-hour care. And at the last minute, because she was in the Marines and her husband was in the Navy, but at the last minute, she is given full coverage by the government. Whatever it costs in the nursing home, whatever the costs are, it's paid to her every month. And it's in excess of $2,000 a month, which is pretty good. So, but that doesn't include the medications and all these other things, which are even more money, and that'll come from the government too. Now, that's pretty good. But you know what I'm trying to do to May? You know what I'm doing to May? I'm messing her up. I'm going to have her be whole and perfect and run out of that place and have to get herself a job. You know? But she's got retirement coming, and Kip's retirement is still hers too. So as long as she lives, she has both. And she could be very comfortable. But do you understand what I'm saying? Some people don't want to get well. They don't want to lose their bad neck, you know, their neck. Need their neck brace on because that helps them have money coming in. But what a terrible way to live. What a terrible way to live if you are athletic at all, or if you're energetic, or you believe in yourself. But you see, unconditional love won't allow you to do any of those things. Whatever is yours, you accept, but you don't want it or need it. They send me my Social Security check and I put it in the bank. They send it direct to the bank. No problem. Every month. And, you know, we're living here in perfect harmony. We're living here in balance. We're living here recognizing that we are learning to live unconditional love. But most of you are angry at me a lot of the time because I'm treating you with unconditional love. No, no, we're not angry at you because you're treating us with unconditional love. We're angry at you when you holler at us. I don't holler at you. I don't holler at you. Hey, what you doing? Hey, what, that's enough of that. Now, Ingeborg, what did you do this time? You know? And Ingeborg's untouched by that because she knows she did nothing. When you are untouched by the storm or the winds or the rains or hail and sleet that come, then you are a master. But if you're touched by any of these things, you got problems. The world still possesses you and owns you. The world still controls you and manipulates you. And I wouldn't give that control to anybody. I like being my own master and doing my own thing and having my own fun. Now, when you go to school, what is the thing that usually bothers you the most in school? No. Say it. What bothers you the most when you go to school? Four-letter word. Five-letter. T-E-S-T-S. The tests. The examinations, yeah? School's a lot of fun. It's just examinations that bug you. The homework and examinations, you know. Okay. Well, I give you tests. I give you examinations to see if you're untouched, to see if I can scratch the surface of your pristine magnificence, you know. And if I can, you got a little work to do. You know, I'd say bad things. I'm not going to say it because that I don't do that either too much. But I'd say, Marilyn, and Marilyn has a 12-year-old son, handsome, fantastic kid. She's just the apple of her eye. And she thinks he's just so fantastic. Marilyn, sorry to tell you, your son got run over this afternoon. Now, what would Marilyn do? Ah, oh, my son! Oh, my apple, you know, my eye. And what would she do? She's not passing the test, is she? All she has to do is say, I bless him as he moves into his next dimension. Now, could you do that? Well, not really, no. But you see, I'm giving you tests. In the first place, you know it is a test. In the second place, you know it probably isn't so. But are your emotions stable enough that you can handle it? That's tough. That's real tough stuff. But that's what tests are supposed to be. They're supposed to be real tough. They're supposed to really get after you and prove to yourself how strong you are, how capable you are, how untouched you are. And you complain at me for giving these tests. And later I say to you, hey, you make it up. Look this way. You say, hey, you know, don't do that. When I give you a test, don't think, oh, Herb's just giving me a test. Probably not so. Because if you think that, it's so. But if you think, hey, that's the way it goes sometimes. I bless him and love him. I'm not possessed by him. You know? Sure. Somebody came home and told Ellen that the ego had a problem. Well, you remember in The Art and Science of Wholeness, the three sons, and the three daughters, and the papa. And the papa went off to somewhere, and then the sons went on a journey. And on the way back from the journey, the sons were told each a different story. One that the papa was dead, another that he was a convict, and another that he was a murderer or something like that. Now, what did the sons believe? By the time they got home, there was Papa sitting reading to his daughters, happy as can be. But Papa, what was this that was said about you? And the father said, sons, you are your own master. Don't believe anything you hear from anybody. I created that illusion. I created those people. Those people weren't real. I created that illusion speaking to you and telling you these things. If you remember, it was late at night when you heard that. and you had been asleep, and you woke up, and these people were talking around the fire, and you heard them talking about me, and you believed it. You believed it. Instead of saying, my dad is whole and perfect. My dad's whole and perfect. My dad is perfect. My dad is wonderful. I believe in my dad. I love my dad. Untouched, untouched. Your dad's a convict. I believe in my dad. I'm untouched by it. That's no big deal. Your dad's a murderer. So you say. Not in my world. I don't even hear it. I don't even hear it. I don't even know it. And even hearing it, I'm untouched. I'm untouched. Can you be untouched on your master path? Can you be untouched living unconditional love? Not being possessed by anything or anybody? Or not being possessed of any objects? That's part of this game. It's part of this game. And the madder you are at me, the happier you make me. Because I know I still got work to do with you. Not that I want to have work to do with you, but you just confirm the area we have to work in. And if you have lost your cool over an area, you can be sure we're going to work on that very strongly. So think about these things. I know what I'm doing. Been there, done that. Been in this business more years than you'll ever know. And it's wonderful. But if you really want to get someplace, just follow what I ask you to do with all your heart and soul. Don't object. Don't rebel. As I say, my rebels are my greatest students. But you're all past that stage now. You're my greatest students. Now, do whatever you know I want you to do, whatever I ask you to do, whatever I say to you, do it just as though, hey, that's God giving me that direction. And it is the God in you giving you that direction. That's why you're here. That's why you created yourself in this circumstance. So, with that, have fun. Enjoy yourself. And know that I love you more than you'll ever know. I love you.